Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season two on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season one and putting out daily recaps.
Beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring amazing special guests from the cast and crew.
After that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season two.
The Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Hour number two begins. It is 7:07. Your time check brought to you by Hayes Jewelers, where the answer is always yes. It's the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy and a traffic update.
Yeah, I got a Sky listener reporting an accident. Say we're talking about 41. This is going to be, probably a little south of 464. Looks like that's got things blocked up a bit there. So we'll keep our eyes on that for you this morning.
All right. Top story, mid-air collision, Reagan International Airport. Jet carrying 63 passengers collided with a Black Hawk Army helicopter. Not good. You heard the news at the top of the hour. We continue to follow that one. It's just an awful tragedy. First responders really on the scene, and they've saved over 300 responded. So, pray for the best outcome you can, and for the families that certainly are going to, there's going to be a lot of loss of life, unfortunately. RFK Jr., nasty face-off with Democrat senators yesterday. Oh, my gosh. These people are vicious. And several of them, we already know, have taken in literally millions, like Elizabeth Warren, taken in millions from pharmaceutical or healthcare-related folks. As like part of her, in her case, trying to get elected president. So, yeah, and we'll get to more cuts on that. It's really grotesque, and they're really trying to make RFK Jr. look bad, clearly, and taking a lot of his statements and things out of context. But you know, here's how I look at some of the things he has said. He is a person who questions the status quo. Why is the level of obesity in the U.S. so high? You know, if you include overweight people with the obese, we're at like 70%. If it's just obese, I think it's like 43. But really, you get into the 70 percentile considered overweight or obese. And all the health-related issues that go with it. And why is it? Is it the availability of food, the availability of bad, overprocessed food? Is there chemicals in our food supply? These are questions that he asked, because how can you make America healthier if you haven't been somebody who's been questioning these things?
But somehow we're like that. Yeah, we have more pharmaceuticals than any place else in the world.
This is ground control to Major Musk.
Sorry, David Bowie.
Yeah.
President Trump called on SpaceX CEO Elon Musk to go get him.
Wow.
Rescue.
Wow.
Two NASA astronauts who have been stuck at the International Space Station for months.
That's crazy. They're supposed to be there, like a week?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Some people do anything to get out of doing chores at home.
I'm sorry, honey. I'd love to come home, but I'm stuck in space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stranded by Boeing and virtually abandoned in space by the Biden administration, according to Trump's Truth Social post. President Trump has publicly appealed to SpaceX founder Elon Musk to rescue the two Americans, and they've been up there several months, the astronauts Suni Williams and Butch Wilmore. Wow. Butch and the Suni
sounds
Dance
like a,
Kid.
Or it sounds like a movie, doesn't it?
We're getting there.
Yeah.
They were part of a Boeing mission launched in early June of 2024, and that was supposed to be a short trip. However, due to concerns with a Boeing Starliner spacecraft, NASA decided to keep them on the ISS for an extended period, a situation that's included multiple delays and equipment problems.
Well, that's extended, all right. Man.
Yeah.
Mm.
I can't imagine what it would be like that much time in that confined of a space with, I mean, you're in a tin can, as described actually in that song.
Yeah.
Floating in my tin can.
Yeah.
Far above the earth, planet Earth is blue, and there's nothing I can do.
Boy, so that's descriptive about, at this point, isn't it?
Yeah.
Who knew?
We thought maybe they would give Melania a break this go-around. You know?
Wasn't it just yesterday or the day before we were talking about this?
Yes, it was. And I said, you know, maybe she's going to get a little bit better treatment than the first time. I mean, here you actually have somebody who is, you know, ready to be on the cover of a magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I mean, compared to Jill Biden, she's not even chopped liver. After spending the past 4 years fawning over First Lady Jill Biden and former Vice President Kamala Harris, who have both been featured on the cover of Vogue multiple times, Vogue not only is not asking Melania Trump to be on the cover, they're actually launching an attack on her. Yeah, because recently you may have seen her White House portrait. And Greg got a personalized copy of that. That I wrote.
Looks amazingly like just like Bob's handwriting. It's crazy. It's so similar.
They said Trump looked more like a freelance magician than a public servant. Vogue fashion writer Hannah Jackson wrote of Melania Trump's recently unveiled official White House portrait. Public servant? Her husband is.
Yes, yeah,
she's not.
No. Nobody elected her. She's not getting a paycheck.
No, anything that she decides to do is gratis. It's not expected. She's not a servant.
I see that as a
of the public.
Take charge. Hey, I'm going to do some things here.
Well, yeah, they say, oh, yeah, a public servant.
Wow.
She looks like a freelance magician. It's what they call a power pose. And she looks darn good doing it.
Yeah.
In her piece published Tuesday, this fashion writer, Hannah Jackson, goes on to say, Trump looked more like she was guest starring on an episode of The Apprentice than assuming the role of the First Lady of the United States. And adding that the black and white photo looks like as though the First Lady is trying to convey, you're fired. Where do these people come up with this stuff?
Oh, my goodness.
Trump's clothing certainly didn't help the boardroom. Situation. The fashion writer says she's critiquing Melania Trump's Dolce & Gabbana tuxedo jacket and Ralph Lauren cummerbund and trousers, attacking her choice to wear a tuxedo over a blazer or blouse.
I think it's classy. Looks awesome.
If you're being honest, the woman is a model.
Yeah,
she still looks like a model, and she's one of those rare people that can literally put on a ugly canvas potato bag and make it look good. That's just that is one of her many gifts. It's a gift. Why do you have, you know, the only reason they are insulting her, the only reason is because of who she's married to.
But you want to put Jill Biden. Nothing against Jill. Just nice, average-looking lady, but really, you're gonna grill Melania, and then crazy.
It goes on. It's perhaps really? Unsurprising that a woman who lived in a gold-encrusted penthouse, whose fame is so intertwined with a reality television empire, would refuse to abandon theatrics. And showing. The woman is a fashion writer for Vogue. You would think she'd be getting that Melania would be getting accolades.
Oh yeah,
for how good she looks, how she appears, how she wears whatever outfit
she's wearing.
And so, I mean, I guess the Vogue people don't care about half of the country.
What's this? Do you have the writer's name, just for curiosity there?
Yeah. It's a Jackson. Her first name, Hannah. Hannah Jackson. Yeah. Okay. Greg's going to do some deep research on this woman who is appears to be not very deep or thoughtful.
Yeah,
the Vogue fashion writer went on to point out that the First Lady's portrait is noticeably more toned down than her 2017 White House portrait, which showed Melania Trump in color, wide-eyed, and smiling. Trump regularly sends messages with her clothing choices. Isn't it interesting? Oh, you seem to know a lot about this woman who you can't wait to disparage.
Mm-hmm.
It's an obsession, anyone? Yeah. Yeah. Hinting, this is a message she's sending, hinting wealth.
Hinting?
Yeah.
She's married to a billionaire.
Oh, yeah.
She's not hinting anything.
Well, and she tries to interweave that with, you know, the high-tech CEOs, because now they're mad at them because they appear to be willing to play ball with the Trump administration. They're
so
just
petty.
These are sick, deranged people. And the list goes on. 7:16 on the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here, and the Bob Rose Scramble is on. Don't miss a chance to be part of the fun action and a great benefit to ARC Alachua. It's Friday, April 4th at Hawkstone Golf and Country Club. Go to arcalachua.org and get your teams in there before it sells out. All right, coming up next, what's bugging you? Call in now, 877-975-9825. It's brought to you by Florida Pest Control. The only bugs they can't control are litter bugs. Good morning and welcome. It's the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here. It's 7:22, and it's time for What's Bugging You? This is your opportunity to call in and air it out and get it off your chest, whatever it is. Could be a little little minor thing that's irritating you, or something big, or anything in between. All right? And it's brought to you by Florida Pest Control. The only bugs they can't control are litter bugs, and we don't want them around here. All right, so call in now, 877-975-9825. If you don't get through right away, please try back. We'll try to get you in. Good morning, Tony. What's bugging you?
Good morning. The Florida legislators bugging me. These people have zero interest in assisting the governor in dealing with Florida's massive illegal immigration program. They get up there and they act like they care about these people, but they really don't. Now, we all know that transnational gangs and the cartel are the biggest facilitators of this. So my question, and this is my opinion, my question is, are they really scared about their cartel overlords, or are they really scared about the will of the Florida people? Because if you follow the money like in other states, it all goes back to one thing. I think they're dirty, I think they're getting paid, and I think they're scared of their cartel overlords, and that's just my opinion. Thanks, Bob.
No, thank you. I mean, it is hard to understand. It's one of the reasons why we're going to talk to the governor later on this morning, and you know, to ask about that. What's their motivation? They call themselves Republicans. They run as Republicans. They get elected. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden they get, I mean, completely weak-kneed. Yeah, this is one of those logic things, like why would you want immigration enforced any other way other than effectively and efficiently?
Well, and if we've already got systems in place, it comes under the governor's umbrella, as I put it. Why are they wanting to mess with it anyway?
Exactly.
Just let him do his job, and let's just move on.
Yep. Let's go to Jeff. What's bugging you?
The contrast between Homan as the border czar and Kamala Harris as the border czar. The contrast should not be that wide. And the reason it's that wide is because the left is a bunch of undercover treasonous traitors. That's what's bugging me. That's the truth. God bless America.
Yeah. What about the difference between Kristi Noem and Secretary Mayorkas, former secretary? Already, she's been in on raids, literally boots on the ground. Yeah, this is a refreshing change of administration, to say the very least.
She has very nice boots.
877-975-9825. Careful now. Tom, what's bugging you?
Oh, what's bugging me? First off, morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good.
But anyway, what's bugging me is the state legislator that Florida's overwhelmingly voted Republican for aren't Republican at all. They're not fighting for what they had ran on, and then that was to support our governor. They're not doing it. It's just bugging me really bad. I'm tired of buying fresh from Florida, but the illegals are picking it.
Well, why? I mean, why at this time when, yeah, like you said, Republicans dominate the legislature, Republican governor, we've had a succession of them, and mm-hmm. the state is doing very, very well. I guess there are people that want to get elected, and they say they're Republicans, but at heart, there's no way they could be. They couldn't, because this is the opportunity to push forward a very important agenda. John, what's bugging you?
Yeah, Bob, wasn't it nice, political left? They threw us a bone in the way of you know, going and getting after Senator Menendez of New Jersey after they let the Biden crime family slide and they falsely went after Trump on more than one occasion?
Yeah, Menendez got, former senator from New Jersey, Menendez got 11-year sentence. Man, this guy was a dirty dog. All the way back to when I started talk radio, he was really one of the first stories I talked about.
Isn't that funny?
It's amazing that here we are 24 years later, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to Phil. What's bugging you?
What's bugging me is I don't believe Mayorkas was pardoned, and I believe he should be charged with facilitating an alien invasion of the United States. And that's treasonable. And he should be charged. That's what's bugging me.
Well, that's very interesting. I don't know if he was included in that or not. Do you know, was Mayorkas part of the Biden getting off the hook?
Oh, as far as a pre-pardon?
Yeah. I'm not sure if he was mentioned or not.
His name didn't pop up, but
yeah,
I don't know. That's a good
Phil
question.
Phil said
now.
He wasn't, so I tend to believe him. Yeah, that's very interesting. Let's go to Bob. What's bugging you?
The rhinos in the state legislature, the Senate. Last night, Dana Lash had a whole thing about it, and it seems like they're bought off by the sugar growers. And we don't need rhinos bought off by anybody. We need rhinos that are working for us.
Well, we don't need rhinos at all. I think so. Hopefully.
Only at the zoo
meant to
or
say.
The African plains. Yeah.
We want real Republicans.
Yeah.
And we want them to push forward the conservative agenda. And dealing with this immigration issue is huge, and they shouldn't be weakening any of the things we're doing. They should be strengthening every single part of that immigration bill. We'll talk more about it coming up, including talking to Governor DeSantis himself in the 9 o'clock hour. So don't go anywhere. It's 7:28. Happy Thursday. You're listening to 97.3 The Sky. Good morning and welcome. It's 7:35. Happy Thursday. It's the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here, and your time check is brought to you by Hayes Jewelers, where the answer is always yes. Last night, tragedy struck. Reagan International Airport jet and helicopter collide. This was a midair collision, and it's a terrible scene. Responders have been there working hard all night long, and we'll probably get, there are some numbers that are coming out, but this was a regional jet. I mean, if you're looking for silver linings, at least it wasn't, you know, one of the really big ones. This one had 63 passengers on it, and it was a Army Black Hawk helicopter that it collided with, and just awful. On every level, Trump has already come out and thanked the first responders for their incredible work. And J.D. Vance calls for prayers for everyone involved in the collision at Ronald Reagan Airport. Absolutely awful. Well, we've got other things that we want to talk about as well. Yesterday, RFK Jr., wow! Did they try to light him up? I mean, the Senate Democrats were just a little bit too over the top. And joining us right now, a voice that you might be familiar with, Dr. John, otherwise known as Dr. John Littell. Good morning, Doctor. How are you?
Good morning, Bob and Greg. Wow, what a great privilege to be actually in the studio. Man, it's been a
finally.
Long time.
Finally.
And we can say the doctor is in the house.
There you go. There
we
you
love
go.
It. And welcome.
Thank you.
So what do you think about RFK Jr.? I mean, here's my quick thing. I like somebody who asks questions about science, about health, about things that could be in our food. But apparently there's many in government that don't like these questions. Why is that?
Well, he's challenging the narrative, as we all do on the show. But you got to love Elizabeth Warren, and you got to love his response to Elizabeth Warren when she was asking if he would somehow profit financially from being Secretary of Health and Human Services, which is ludicrous. And then his response to her is, you mean, am I going to sue Big Pharma? Am I going to sue the pharmaceutical companies that are in your pocket? The thing, when he first contacted me, you know, about a year and a half ago, he had read a book that I've written on women's healthcare that questioned the narrative of a lot of things that are done in healthcare. And I knew right off that he just wanted to talk to a doctor who questions things, who's critically thinking. And his whole life has been that way. He's been a critical thinker. I mean, since he first attacked the whole mercury poisoning of fish, you know, he was trying to protect the fish in the ocean, and now he's moved on to protecting children and families, and as you've so well, you know, said, the food supply, and yes, the vaccines. You know, and that's the last time I was with Bobby Kennedy. We actually were, it was a whole conference on the vaccine question. And, you know, they're threatened. They're threatened by him. And they're threatened by, not only are they threatened, the whole medical industry is threatened by patients, families, you know, mama bears, you know, who want to protect their children. That's a good thing. That's a good thing. People are getting more informed.
Look, you know, people like me, we go to WebMD, we go to these other sites, we try to take in information, you know, and not necessarily challenge our doctor, but to ask important questions about our own health care. And I could understand if you're the provider, some level of frustration to go, oh, did you see an ad for that? What makes you think you need? So you've got to have some respect for your physician to begin with, but at the end of the day, how do you overcome this unbelievable money and influence, this bombardment of advertisements, and the fact that you brought up Elizabeth Warren, and I think she took in $3 million from healthcare and health-related things while she was running for president, over $3 million.
Yeah, how were they paying, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs? You know, was it Kelsey, you know, Pfizer? I mean, it's just, first of all, I hope, I pray they're going to get rid of drug advertising. We're the only country that allows this kind of stuff to go on. And, you know, yeah, patients come to me and they've seen the ads on television and they want to get the latest, greatest medication. And how often in the history of medicine have these medications turned out to be, you know, detrimental to your health? But they sure generated billions and billions. But and of course, with, as we know, with vaccines, you know, they're immune from lawsuits. That's got to change. That statute that's, you know, 40 years old, came out during the Bush administration, needs to disappear. You need to have the ability when your child has been truly damaged. And the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, VAERS, is replete. By the way, let me say this about that. I have tried to report adverse reactions to COVID shots when I had patients in my office with palpitations, with cardiovascular concerns, all sorts of adverse reactions. When you try to report to VAERS, it is a bear. It is ridiculously time consuming. I did it twice, and then I had to stop because they kept getting back saying, "You need to do this, that." I have no time as a practicing physician, and if your child or any of you are impaired by a vaccine, and you show up in the emergency room with a blood clot, do you think they're going to take the time to ask, was this due to the vaccine that you had 3 days ago? 99% of the vaccine reactions are never reported because it's never, the question is never asked, and no one will take the time to report it. So the VAERS is just the tip of the iceberg. Bobby Kennedy knows that. The vaccine industry knows that, and they don't want him at the helm of HHS, that's for sure.
Yeah, and that long-haul COVID, as it's being referred to, finally is at least being talked about widely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, do you think Bobby Kennedy would really try to address that and leading to good information and ways to mitigate that? I guess we're looking for a way to mitigate it. If you've already had the shots and there's some ill side effects, you know, what can people do to mitigate that?
Yeah, healthy immune system. I tell you, we all need to, you know, buckle down and realize that we've had a frontal assault on our immune systems over the last 4 years with the onslaught of the mRNA injections that should never have been approved. It was not ready for prime time. Robert Malone, who's a very good friend of mine, was one of the first out of the chute to say that, and he's one of the leading researchers in that field. That said, you know, it's all over the map right now what doctors are doing to try to solve some of these problems that people have. We need to have a concentrated effort on fixing the damage or repairing the damage that was done by these shots. It's a tough road to hoe for RFK Jr. because he is in Trump's camp, and Trump to this day still wants credit for Operation Warp Speed. You know, it's a hard thing politically for him to do. But at least let's allow doctors who've been at the forefront on this, who've been questioning from the very beginning, to work together. Scientists and physicians need to work together. We need not to be squelched. We need not to be, get my board certification taken away, get kicked out of hospitals, things that happened to me personally. You know, a lot of medical students and young doctors were very intimidated by these tactics. They've shut up. They've shut down. They said, listen, I better not get too controversial. I'm just going to go work, maybe in an emergency room for a salary instead of being an independent voice out there. So what they've done effectively is squelch the opposition because of all the censorship that Kat Kamik and others have addressed. But that'll change. That's got to change.
Well, they're going to employ, because we're going to have a doctor shortage coming, there already is one, they're going to use AI. Mm-hmm. And they're going to do a lot of things through AI. And we know, no matter how self-learning this thing is, it's still based on information that is fed to it. And I guess my fear is there's not going to be a Dr. John coming along and being rebellious and asking the right questions and sees how these things are impacting their patients. AI is going to be that cold, here's what you do, this is how you treat it. There is no other methodology. And if you even ask or talk about a different way to work on something, then you're a quack, you're crazy, you're a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, protocol-driven healthcare algorithms is here to stay and doesn't take much of a thinking brain. If someone comes into me with pneumonia, bronchitis right now, I stick it in my electronic medical record because we have to use that, of course, and that's how we get paid. As soon as I put that diagnosis in there, guess what pops up before I even thought about what I'm going to treat the patient with? The antibiotic that AI has already decided in the EMR. And, you know, sometimes and often lately, I'm having to look way down, scroll down to the 13th or 14th drug to find the one I really want to prescribe. But who's going to take the time to do that?
Exactly. Real quick, you said we got to build up our immune systems. They've been under attack. But isn't part of the problem our immune systems are being used against our body, autoimmune?
With autoimmune disease, with mRNA injections, we have mobilized forces in our immune system that we never wanted to have. We've created the spike proteins, and we've taken away the emphasis on preventing cancer, right? The cancer-protecting cells are no longer doing their job, which is why we've seen this upsurge of cancer, because it's too busy fighting spike proteins that were introduced into the bloodstream, unnaturally, by the way, through the bloodstream, not through the respiratory tract where we could have fought it in the first place. So, yeah, we got a lot of cleanup to do. I think RFK Jr. is the man to lead the way.
All right. Can you hang for another?
I 8:30 at Kamik. I'm here, brother.
All right. more with Dr. John. Hang in there. It is 7:45, and you're listening to 97.3 The Sky. The doctor is in the house. Good morning and welcome. It's the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here at 7:50, 10 minutes till 8. And I'm talking about Dr. John Littell. And he's been on the forefront of this whole thing right when COVID broke. Gosh, you were, I think, the first call with any level of real medical expertise on the show.
So, that's right. I called What's Bugging Me, and it was bugging me what was happening with COVID. And then you guys, you know, graciously allowed me to keep calling in. But you know, I've always been a questioning kind of doctor, and I just see so much of that not happening in healthcare these days.
Now, you treated, I want to say, 3,000 patients and lost one during COVID to comorbidities, et cetera?
Yeah, in terms of in the outpatient setting, yeah, the ones I was able to take care of, it was over 3,000. Now, that's not just in person. Obviously, a lot of that was telehealth people calling me mm-hmm. from Kansas and New York and Canada and Hawaii that were being denied. This is at a time when we knew that the ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine were doing what they needed to do, regardless of what you're going to hear nowadays. I saw it firsthand. Mm-hmm. I took it myself. I saw the results. You could feel how much it was helping with those alpha and delta strains. So, yes, that was what I was doing.
Why would they be in such denial about that information about ivermectin? I mean, they knocked it off the internet. I mean, they went crazy over it, and they said it's for horses and pigs and not for people, and what the heck?
Well, they were using it in one country, in India. They were using it widely in one state, Uttar Pradesh, where they had like very few fatalities, and they didn't even roll out the vaccine. The narrative, if you crawl back then, was get the vaccine in everybody's arms and get everybody, frankly, into the hospitals. They were, you know, people would show up hypoxic, and then ultimately the hospitals were getting revenue, COVID money for every patient that showed up. It was anywhere from $20,000 to $60,000. It was a boon for the hospitals. It was a boon for the vaccine industry. Patients suffered. They were told to go home with their oxygen, to come back when their oxygen levels were less than 90%, which at that point in time they had to be admitted to the hospital. Nothing was being done. Honestly, I never would have gone that route if it wasn't out of sheer desperation and saying, I believe something can be done. And one or two very good patients who had done their own research who came to me and said, Dr. Littell, I've seen this work. I heard about this, and I did my own research, and I was willing to listen to my patients. Mm. You know, a lot of doctors, you know, when a patient comes in knowing something that they don't know, you know, that's kind of insulting their ego. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we had to do what we had to do to learn. And I knew from my own history, from having written the book I wrote, that the healthcare system was going to fail us on this because they failed us in so many ways over the last years. The one, especially because of Big Pharma. Pushing or the vaccine industry pushing their narrative.
Now you've got Medicare, Medicaid, and they're covering, because of the Biden administration, they're covering illegal aliens, people that shouldn't even be here. Mm-hmm. But the hospitals don't mind, is what I'm gathering, because now they're getting paid for health care that used to be like indigent health care and it wasn't being paid for. Now they're being paid out of taxpayer money. So what is going to happen when Trump cuts all that off? Are some of these border hospitals going to go out of business? What's going to happen?
Well, you know, the whole hospital model of health care, you know, if I were king of the world, I'd like to see a lot of our hospitals just disappear. I'm going to be honest with you. We have more hospitals per capita than any country in the world. You go to a country like Finland, which has 1/6 of the hospitals per capita that we have and is much, much healthier as a country. We're a hospital-centric system right now. You know, they're getting paid well, as you just said. They are getting paid well. They put up banners about their freestanding emergency rooms. You know, if you think you have the flu, come here and get tested. And so we have to really reel that in and recognize that when you step foot in that emergency room, what I tell my patients, you know, because I have this thing, call me before you go to the ER. I say, if you go to the emergency room, you get what you deserve. That's what I tell them.
Wow. Yeah, that's, to me, obviously the last resort to go to the emergency room. It's like, I literally have to be dying before I go that route.
And well, that's what it's for.
And you've mentioned this, healthcare advocate. If you are in the hospital and you don't have somebody looking out for you, and I'm talking about every hour of every waking day, you are in trouble.
No, it's gotten to crisis mode. What I'm seeing in and out of three hospitals on a daily basis is that we have a hospital system right now where the doctor who's taking care of you in the hospital doesn't know what you were before. They didn't see you walking, talking, smiling, coming into an office. They see you as, you know, the stroke in room 434 or the appendix in 230 or the heart failure in 333. And, you know, there's something, the one thing, if I could also change this, I would incentivize the outpatient doctors to go into the hospital and at least see what's going on with Mrs. Smith when they're actually at their sickest point of their life. And with Mrs. Smith, often what I'm seeing in the hospital, these are patients even that I'm trying to take care of, is that there's no incentive for the hospital to get them out. The subspecialists are not doing their job quickly. You're waiting for consults. You're waiting for a team. People can sit there languishing for days waiting to be discharged. Yeah, I'll give you one story. I had a patient guy, she came in with a stroke. She got swabbed for COVID, didn't even have COVID symptoms. And when they tried to get her to a rehab place, nobody would take her because she was COVID positive. This is like this month. And she had no COVID symptoms. They're still swabbing people for COVID in the hospitals. Tell me that's not insane. And this poor lady sat another week in the hospital trying to get out just because of this stupid COVID test that had no bearing on reality.
I had severe chest pains, and I already was a victim of a heart attack one time. And so EMS did a great job in Marion County, got me to the hospital. And so when they admitted me, because that chest pain got so high that, you know, I passed out. So they took my blood pressure. It was very low, like 80 over 40. So when I was admitted for low blood pressure, even though I had chest pain, which created it. So they were not giving me my blood pressure medication, and my blood pressure was going up to like 200. And I said, hey, I'm going to have a stroke if you don't give me my medication. And the nurse said, like she knew it all, she goes, well, you are here being treated for low blood pressure, so we are not worried about how high it gets. Those are her words.
No, I believe me, I can't tell you enough stories. I don't want to denigrate all the hospitals and everything. The great work that they do, cardiovascular surgeons, neurosurgeons do great work, trauma services do great work, but there's no captain of the ship for the patient that really knows the patient well. That's got to change, because God knows you deserve it when you're. And if I'm, that's one reason I keep my hospital privileges, because if a good friend or a family member ends up in the hospital, I want to be there. And of course, all my patients. It's a hard job, and most doctors don't, for lifestyle reasons, don't want to do it anymore. But you know, it's what we're supposed to do. It's our vocation.
But it used to be that way. Now they have hospitalists that
they
come in,
and laborists for OBGYN. They don't deliver their own babies. It's all pediatricians have hospitalists. So it is what it is. It's going to change. Bring back back the vocation of medicine.
Well, and keep in touch with us like I know you will. And who knows, you might be calling us from D.C. one of these days. Just don't forget the little guys. That's all we ask, right. Dr.
You know,
John.
The first phone call, you know, it was here. Remember that's, that.
Don't forget your little blue-collar friends here in North Central Florida. We really appreciate what you've done and put your medical license in peril because of your beliefs and principles. And I think that speaks volume. So, Dr. John, once again, our pleasure.
Appreciate you guys. God bless you both. Thank you.
All right. Be safe and give me some drugs. All right. The 8 o'clock hour is right around the corner. News Talk 97.3, The Sky.